Chapter 5. Bliss Techniques. Baroness Susan Greenfield was delighted. She sprang about the machine with a childlike excitement. It was tiny for a device supposed to measure brain activity, not larger than an average-sized handbag. Sitting on my right, Nick Shackle and Guy Kahane, the philosophers at the Oxford Centre for Science of the Mind, exchanged worried looks and kept quiet. "We need a guinea pig to try out the consciousness machine," Susan said. "Who wants to volunteer?" Silence. She looked around impatiently. There were about 15 of us in the room, but I was the only psychologist. If no one else volunteered, there was no way she wouldn't pick me. "I'll do it," I said. "Let's see how much consciousness there is to measure." "Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Just sit down right here and do something like meditate. I'm sure you do that anyway, right?" At the time, I was actually weaning myself off meditation. For the past couple of years, it had been taking up quite a chunk of my time, often between 2 and 3 hours a day. More than relaxing or peaceful, it was deeply pleasurable, not unlike David Lynch's description of experiencing meditation as falling into bliss. I'd get into a mental state where thoughts disappeared. Like being in an empty room with all the blinds shut. Inexplicably, rather than being in a dull space where nothing happened, I would feel something I can only roughly describe as waves of blissful electricity moving through my body. There was a downside to it, though. Coming out of the meditation, I often felt I was hovering above reality and everyday concerns. Despite being able to control or even feel unattached from negative feelings, anger, sadness, or frustration, I was shocked to find that, sometimes, this lack of attachment made me less sensitive and empathic to other people's feelings. It was only when a friend joked I was becoming a meditation junkie that the penny dropped. He was right. Meditation was turning into a way of bypassing real life, or at least avoiding the parts of it that were difficult or bitter. I had decided then to drastically reduce my practice. Back at the centre, I sat down and was plugged into the consciousness device. There was nothing to it, just a strip with 3 electrodes that were attached to my forehead. Susan Greenfield shifted around restlessly in her seat, eager for us to get started. Originally developed to use in surgery so that doctors could be certain that sedated patients were no longer conscious, the machine had a digital monitor with red numbers that would indicate my level of conscious awareness. I closed my eyes and sought to enter that dark room of thoughtlessness. After no more than 3 minutes, Susan stopped me. "Did you see that? The consciousness level dropped 5 points. I wasn't sure that was a good thing. I had always hoped meditation would make me more, not less, conscious. There are many ways of training our minds to become more aware of what's going on outside or within us. In the previous chapter, we looked at how psychological therapy can help us learn more about thoughts and emotions, and to eventually change them. Or, if we're doing mindfulness-based therapy, it can increase our level of self-awareness. The question we now need to address is whether or not contemplative techniques, such as yoga or mindfulness meditation, can lead to significant changes in the way we feel, think and behave. Mind hygiene and yoga. If you do yoga and meditation regularly, you will reach a state of cosmic consciousness. It washes out sadness and worries. Everything. You become transformed. Dee Dee, my first yoga and meditation instructor, never tired of repeating this. A British Ananda Marga monk in his early 40s, he was both prodigiously bendy and firmly dedicated to yoga. His daily routine included 4 hours of practice a day, one morning session at 5 a.m. and an evening one at 6 p.m. "After 2 hours of yoga, your body is soft, soft, just like butter," he said, laughing. "Then your mind becomes so quiet that meditation arises by itself. No effort or need for instructions." After 6 intense months of the hardest physical training I ever endured, I discovered that he wasn't exaggerating.